I read that you mentioned that you went through depression.
Yeah.
You had suicidal thoughts.
Yeah.
And you were yet ambitious. So I don't know if they all came at the same phase, but that's how I read it. And I'm like, how interesting. Like, there's depression, there's suicidal thoughts, and there's ambition. Like, were they all coinciding and coexisting at the same time?
Well, a lot of suicidal people were ambitious.
Hmm.
In fact, because they were ambitious and they had no success, they felt very suicidal. They had very low self-esteem. So that's not all people who commit suicide, but a lot of very famous writers and artists have ended up committing suicide because they never felt like they were accomplishing what they wanted to.
Mm.
So, you know, I've always been very ambitious. I'm a very competitive person. I don't like losing, even in games and such, right? So I'm in my 30s, and I know that there's something inside of me that could be interesting for the world to express. I know it deep inside. I've had these weird experiences, mm-hmm. I have these weird thoughts. They could amount to something interesting, but I haven't been able to figure out how to do it. I try journalism, I try writing plays, I try writing novels, I try writing screenplays. It doesn't click.
Hmm.
It's not who I am. It's not working. But I know I can do something great. And that sense of disappointment in yourself, of frustration, of knowing that you have potential but you can't realize it, was what made me feel deep down very, very depressed. And very much like, if I never find this, what is life worth? What is it? My work and creating something is so important to me that if I can't do it, I don't want to live.
Hmm.
And so it was my ambition that actually drove me to feeling depressed and suicidal.
And how you got out of it, I could assume, is when you found the click? Or it's not as simple?
Well, I've been with the same woman for many years. My wife, I love her very deeply. She's a filmmaker. She's in Czechoslovakia right now making a film.
Mm.
She's been with me. She lived through all the years of my depression.
Mm.
And she knows about it. And she knows that she can say the moments where I went up and down and sunk very deeply. And so it wasn't like I was always every morning suicidal. I was young, I was doing things that I liked, I was excited, but it just kept sinking and sinking and sinking, and then you'd get up and then you'd sink again. And so, how do I get out of this? And then I wrote, it was like 94 or so, I wrote some plays
mm.
that we put on together here in Los Angeles. And that felt good, I felt like expressing myself. They were very weird plays that nobody understood. But it felt good.
Mm.
That kind of lifted me a little bit. And then a year later, I'm in Italy. An old friend from Berkeley, where I went to college, he's Dutch, and he's in Italy, and he's like helping to develop a new media school started by Benetton. And he wanted me to come over to help write the book that would launch this school. An absolutely ridiculous, you know, scheme. Mm. Like, who writes a book to start a school, right? Already it seemed really dubious. But Italy, I mean, who's going to turn down a chance to go to Italy? So naturally I said, sure, yeah. Mm. And I go there, and it's a total fiasco. It's a total scam. It's just a place where people can eat good pasta and have espresso and argue and argue and argue, but nothing ever happens, right? So on the one hand, it's fun. I'm eating good food. I'm not in LA anymore. It's exciting, right? But on the other hand, it's kind of depressing because nothing is happening. It's just so political. It's so Machiavellian. And there's this other man there named Joost Elfers, a Dutchman, who's a friend of my friend. And he and I are both disenchanted. He's this older man. He's brilliant. He's a brilliant designer of books. And one day we're walking in Venice, Italy, along the quays of Brescia, in front of the Piazza San Marco, one of the most beautiful spots in the whole world. And he asked me out of the blue, he goes, Robert, do you have any idea for books? And suddenly, that click that you mentioned clicks. And all of my agony, all of my depression, all of my frustration, it just suddenly came out of me almost like I was vomiting. And I told them this story about power, how everybody in the world wants power, but nobody wants to talk about it. This whole school that we're in, everybody's trying to act like it's so liberal, but it's all about power. And I tell them a story about Louis XIV and his finance minister and how he threw the finance minister in prison for corruption, but in fact it was because he outshone the master, law number one. And that shows you how people's egos rule the world. And he goes, oh my God, that's fantastic, Robert. That's a book. And he said he would pay me to write. Well, I first had to go home and write a treatment. Then if he sells the book, he'll pay me to write it. Everything changed because I realized that all of my negative experiences that I had accumulated over 38 years can now serve as grist for the mill, can now become the 48 laws of power. I don't know if you can understand that, but all my misery had a purpose. It had a purpose for writing the book that will reveal to the world the power games that people played, the power games that I had witnessed, the power games that I had been a victim of for so many years. And so it just turned around in one moment. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I wouldn't be here talking to you if I didn't have that opportunity. What I often tell people is, if that had happened to me when I was 25, and I had the same thing, and they asked me for a book, it wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have mattered. Nothing would have ever come of it. I was ready. It was my moment. I had been so beaten down that I was ready to do it, and I was so motivated. You know, we say get rich or die trying. This was my get rich or die trying. I was either going to make this book work, or that was the end of me. So the motivation was very deep. But yeah, it was an accumulation of thousands of moments that went into it.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.